1 Corinthians chapter 7. I was working on this particular Bible study, and I worked at it a bit and put my pen down and called my pastor friend. He said, "What's up?" I said, "Nothing. I'm working on 1 Corinthians 7 for Wednesday night, and I just thought I'd rather talk to you than work on the passage." And he said, "Well, I just got done with a Sunday school lesson on 1 Corinthians 14, and I'd rather do anything than work on 1 Corinthians. It is a humbling book, and man, is it a humbling book. all of our knowledge and expertise comes crashing into the challenges of 1 Corinthians 7. I have another pastor friend who says the first six chapters of 1 Corinthians is hidden sins and the rest of the book is hard questions. So that's where we are. I want to begin by reading where we were last Wednesday night, which is verses 25 through 35, and then we'll pray and then we'll take up the remainder of the chapter this evening, which will be our portion. "Now concerning virgins, I have no commandment of the Lord, yet I give my judgment as one that hath obtained mercy of the Lord to be faithful. I suppose, therefore, that this is good for the present distress. I say that it is good for a man so to be. Art thou bound unto a wife? Seek not to be loosed. Art thou loosed from a wife? Seek not a wife. But and if thou marry, thou hast not sinned, and if a virgin marry, she hath not sinned. Nevertheless, such shall have trouble in the flesh, but I spare you. But this I say, brethren, the time is short. It remaineth that both they that have wives be as they that had none, and they that weep as though they wept not, and they that rejoice as though they rejoice not, and they that buy as though they possess not. And they that use this world as not abusing it, for the fashion of this world passeth away. But I would have you without carefulness. He that is unmarried careth for the things that belong to the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he that is married careth for the things that are of the world, how he may please his wife. There is a difference also between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman careth for the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and in spirit. But she that is married careth for the things of the world, how she may please her husband. And this I speak for your own profit, not that I may cast a snare upon you, but for that which is comely, and that ye may attend upon the Lord without distraction." And that's where we end. We dealt with that passage last week, and let's pray. Father, always when we come to the Scriptures, we need your help. You are the author, and the meaning resides with you. And yet, periodically, there are times when we are painfully aware that only your Spirit and your guidance will suffice. And we pray that for us in this passage, and not just this passage, but this book. And so help us, please, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, tonight does mark the end of our study through 1 Corinthians 7, with this exception, just to make a note, if you should care. I got asked to address Paul's his attitude towards marriage in 1 Corinthians 7 versus his insistence upon marriage in 1 Timothy 5. And so next week we're going to tackle that. I make no promises to anybody's satisfaction, but next week that will be where we are. And then we'll move on to another challenging passage, 1 Corinthians 8, 9, and 10. Verses 36 through 40 then constitute kind of Paul's summary on this. And what I want to do is, rather than just walk through them, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, is we'll kind of deal with them thematically. But let's go ahead and read them and come to a common freshness to the perspective on the verse. But verse 36, "If any man think that he behaveth himself uncomely toward his virgin, if she pass the flower of her age, and need so require, let him do what he will, he sinneth not, let them marry. Nevertheless, he that standeth steadfast in his heart, having no necessity, but hath power over his own will, and hath so decreed in his heart that he will keep his virgin, doeth well. So then he that giveth her in marriage doeth well, but he that giveth her not in marriage doeth better. The wife is bound by the law as long as her husband liveth. But if her husband be dead, she is at liberty to be married to whom she will, only in the Lord. But she is happier if she so abide, after my judgment. And I think also that I have the Spirit of God. And so this concludes Paul's answer. And we don't know what the question was exactly that the Corinthians asked, which is one of the things that makes it hard. What was the question? We can pretty much be assured of this, folks, and I'll touch a little bit more on this next week. We can pretty much be assured that God knows things about the question that perhaps the Corinthians themselves were not thinking. And that is, you know, this is not uncommon that we come to the Lord with what to us seems to be a very straightforward question. Here's my question, and the Lord seems to answer it in a very complex way because he understands us far better than we understand ourselves. And he recognizes that we do not always see things as clearly as we think we do, and that we are not always entirely, not that we are deliberately deceptive, but we are limited by our humanity and our ability to see. And so his answers tend to be often much more comprehensive than our questions. So anyway, Paul returns then to really two different topics in the end of this. He continues on with his discussion of the virgin, and then he brings back in further instruction on the widow. I do want to reiterate that Paul is not anti-marriage, and he is not opposed to those who would do it. He is just adding a dimension that, again, I think is an essential dimension that we need to contemplate, that is broader than marriage. But again, we will come back to that. All right, so to the text that we have this evening, verses 36 through 40. And again, rather than just deal with it in sequence, I kind of want to deal with it a little bit topically. So topic number one is that which is clear in the paragraph. There are some things in the paragraph that are beyond dispute, that are clear, that are beyond any controversy. And one of the things that is clear in the paragraph is that people have permission to marry. Paul is never trying to take away from anybody the right to marry. He grants it to those that are virgins, verse number 36, but if any man think that he behaveth uncomely, himself uncomely toward his virgin, if she pass the flower of her age and need so required, let him do what he will. He sinneth not, let them marry. And then in verse number 39, the wife is bound by the law as long as her husband liveth, but if her husband be dead, she is at liberty to be married to whom she will, only in the Lord. And so Paul distinctly grants permission, and he grants permission to individuals to make this decision. They do not need to hand that to someone, with this possible exception, and we'll get to it. The matter is not handed off to another. Right? So Paul has given his advice, and his advice has been constant, regardless of your situation, whatever situation you found yourself in, that's probably where you should stay. He has argued that he thinks he has the Lord's mind on that. And what I would say there is that Paul is arguing that he has the Lord's mind on a principle. In other words, folks, if Paul is arguing, I have the Lord's mind that this is the will for everybody, then he cannot turn around and confer permission to marry. If it is the Lord's will in the New Testament age that we don't marry, then we can't turn around and go, but if you want to get married, it's okay. Right? So what Paul is arguing is that he believes that his assessment, which is in general you should remain as you are, is the assessment that the Lord would have, you should remain as you are. But if, for whatever reason he has listed in the passage, you come to a different decision, that is not a sin, and you have liberty to do that as long as you do not violate the pure commands. For instance, verse 39 is very easy. If you're a widow, right, Paul would say, look, just remain a widow. And the Lord would say, I think you should probably remain a widow. And if you would say, but I really think that I should marry this person, then the Lord would say, okay, well, here's the non-negotiable in that equation. They have to be a believer, which is what we would understand only in the Lord to mean. So my advice would be don't do it, but if you really want to do it, it's not a sin to do it, but it would be a sin if you married an unbeliever. So there are things in the passage that is clear. And again, folks, and I'm going to try and deal with it and leave it in a little more detail next week, right? We could come to the passage and ask, why in the world would anybody need permission to get married? When literally, and we will talk about this next week, from the very beginning of the creation, it has been God's plan for people to get married. God will come along at the end of the New Testament and make the argument that the reason he only created two people was so that married couples would have children and then they would grow up to become married couples who would have more children, and that's how he would populate the earth. So why would anybody need permission to be married? And again, folks, we've got to understand that 1 Corinthians 7 is not primarily about marriage. Marriage is the vehicle that God uses extensively in the passage to advance his argument. But the fundamental argument of 1 Corinthians chapter 7 is that your life is not necessarily advanced by changing your status. But changing your status may pose dangers to your spiritual existence. And I would just caution us not to blow that perspective off, because we are very much inclined to be desirous to change our status and to do it for lots of reasons that have nothing to do with God. Where we'd like to live, where we'd like to work, how much money we'd like to make, how we feel about ourselves having made that decision. Those tend to be the kind of things that really drive our decisions. And that's what Paul is really tackling in the passage. That's what he's really getting at, is that there is a correct way to think about ourselves in this world. And it shouldn't be tied up in where we stand, which is why you have the critical passage in the middle of the chapter that have nothing to do with marriage, but everything to do with changing one's status. So the general counsel is, it is probably in your spiritual best interest to stay as you are. That would be Paul's advice. That would be, in general, the Lord's advice. And so it's consistent throughout. If you're single, stay single. If you're married, stay married. If you were born a Jew, don't try to undo your Judaism. And if you were born a Gentile, don't worry about it. And if you're a slave, that doesn't impact your consecration. And if you're a free man, you're not really any more free than a slave is. Or if you're enslaved, you're not any more enslaved than anybody else is, because we all belong to the Lord. And so again, Paul is really tackling, I think, the kind of the, right? This wasn't part of the question, Right? Part of the question had to do with boy-girl relationships. And part of the answer to the question is, be attentive to the fact that human beings tend to crave change. We live, in particular, in America, in the Western world, in the consumer culture, where our mental well-being is regularly peddled to us on the basis of being able to make changes. Buy more stuff, buy newer stuff, buy nicer stuff. We are not immune to that. It caters to our sinful natures. And here is the Lord. Probably not. Probably not. So, it is very clear, right? For all of that, it is very clear, folks. While Paul is consistent that his advice would be to stay as you are, and he is convinced that the Lord's advice would be to stay where you are, he is very convinced that it is not a sin to get married. It is not a sin if in certain situations like widowhood to remarry, and it is certainly not a sin if you have the opportunity as a slave to become free to take it. So it's not a sin to change your status. But in general, don't pursue that. Don't make that the orientation and focus of your life. So there are the things that are clear. Secondly, in verses 36 through 40, there are things that are confusing. There are things that are confusing. Verse number 36. But if any man. Who are those people? Who are those people? Who is the any man to whom Paul is talking? And obviously, and I'm not being critical of our King James Bible in any way, when we tend to read it, right, we read if any man, we tend to default to masculine. But it is not at all masculine. It is completely neutral. And it would not be the way that 17th century writers would have thought, but it would be the way that 21st century readers would think. The text could easily say, if anybody. So if anybody think that he behaveth himself uncomely toward his virgin. And of course, we dealt with this last week. Who are the virgins? It is not a way that we would talk. Now, again, I will mention this because I know that some of you have ESVs. The ESV doesn't simply translate the word for you. It actually interprets it because it uses the word betrothed or fiancé. I don't remember which. The virgin is the one that we would call the fiancé. So if anybody thinks that he behaves himself uncomely toward his fiancé. Now, I do want to point this out just because you may be aware of it or have a note about it. But there are some people who argue that the marriage that Paul is talking about in 1 Corinthians 7 is a spiritual marriage. And what they mean by a spiritual marriage is that a husband and a wife, they are legitimately husband and wife. But for the sake of the Lord, they have sworn off any physical contact so that their marriage exists only in the spiritual realm. And I don't think that that's what Paul is talking about, but you can find people who argue that that is what Paul is talking about. And certainly, folks, we know from our own American history that a variety of religious groups have had rather unorthodox views of marriage. The Shakers, of course, practiced non-marriage. And part of becoming a Shaker was a commitment to celibacy. And not just celibacy, but the absence of marriage. On the other hand, those in the Oneida community practiced complex marriage. You were married to everybody in the assembly with all full conjugal rights to everybody in the assembly. So people have gone to all extremes when it comes to the proper way to think about male and female relationships. So I'm just going to put that out there. It's Wednesday night. We tend to talk a little bit more about some of the more technical stuff. But so who are the virgins? Are they those who are engaged in a spiritual marriage but never a physical marriage? Are they the fiancés? In this verse, verse number 36, are they virgin daughters under the authority of their father? Are they unmarried women who therefore are under the authority of their father? Which is, you know, something that in our world exists in Christianity rather, I don't want to say it isn't real, but it's not a huge issue for the most part. But in Paul's world, it was just the way that it was. Women did not have independent authority and identity, folks. They just didn't. They went from their dad to their husband. And if they were widowed, then they fell under the responsibility of their son. But there was relatively little of this idea that we have of the strong, independent woman who is carving her own path in the world. That just didn't exist in the Roman world very much, and in the Jewish world, not at all. So we're just talking about some of the confusing things in the text as we look at the verses and we look at them carefully. Who are the anybodies? Who are the virgins? What does it mean to behave uncomely towards one? If any man think that he behaveth himself uncomely toward his virgin, how would you do that? And who, by the way, is doing it? Is it the fiancé who is behaving unseemly, or is it the father who is behaving unseemly? And what is the flower of her age? And if you'll notice in your King James Bible, our translators, again, are operating. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm saying you'll notice that they have supplied a female gender for you that is not necessarily in the text. Paul did not say that. If she passed the flower of her age, if she is, okay, I'm just gonna say it. If she is beyond her acme, because that's literally the Greek word, hyperacme. Acme being a word that means peak. So if she's past her prime, all right, here's the verse. And again, Paul is not specifying who these people are. If anybody thinks that they behave themselves uncomely towards their virgin, if they pass their peak, if they are past their peak, in need so require, well, what would require? What would be the requirement? And again, folks, of whom is the requirement being made? Is it the virgin's requirement? Is it the fiancé's requirement? Is it the father's requirement? There's a lot of confusion in verse 36. In any place there's a lot of biblical confusion, folks, there's a lot of writing by people who are making their points and their arguments. So there are things that are extremely clear in the passage. It is okay to get married. And God's feelings are not going to be hurt, if I could put it that way, if you do. But there are equally things of great confusion in the passage, particularly verse 36. So finally then, right, our third topic is an attempt to come to understanding of what Paul is saying. I would understand the passage. I would understand verses 36, 37, and 38 to be describing the relationship between a young lady and her father or her male authority. That Paul is not here talking about a relationship between the betrothed couple. And he is certainly not talking about some kind of unusual marriage where you're married legally but not physically. Because Paul has already addressed that in the early part of the chapter. He nor God has any room to accommodate that kind of nonsense. And here are some of the reasons why I would take that approach. Right? Here, you know, Largent, why would you say verses 36 through 38 are describing a relationship between dad and daughter? Well, number one, because it is really faithful to the text. It requires no torturing or twisting or getting around anything that Paul is saying in the text. Secondly, it has historically been the dominant position within the church. The vast majority of people throughout the course of church history who have written on 1 Corinthians 7, 36 through 38 have found it to be a relationship between dads and daughters. Thirdly, it is completely sympathetic to the culture of the day. Completely sympathetic to the culture of the day. Look, I was an unsaved teenager. Well, I wasn't an unsaved teenager. I was an unsaved young man when I proposed to my wife. But I never did ask my father-in-law for permission. Never did. I asked her, will you marry me? She said, yes. We were engaged. That was perhaps a little unusual even in the mid-1970s. But quite honestly, I wasn't trying to be difficult. It just never crossed my mind. My parents didn't say to me, you going to ask her dad? I just got married, proposed. That kind of stuff didn't happen in Paul's world. Or if it did, you wrote tragedy. The Greek poets wrote tragedies about it. So with that as the scenario, all right, with that as kind of the backstory, I'm going to present this to you along the historical view that what Paul is doing in verses 36 through 38 is describing a scenario in which we have an unmarried woman and interaction with her and her father, the man who would be the authority, the man who would grant permission for her to marry. She wants to marry. But she doesn't just go and get married. She has to have permission to marry. All right, so let's make sure that we're, now let's take that part of it and put it into the broader context of 1 Corinthians 7. What would Paul say? Or in this instance, supposing, right, you're the father. And your daughter wants to marry. And you walk into Starbucks to get a cup of coffee and there's Paul. And you said, hey, if you have a second, I have a question to ask you. My daughter wants to get married. What is your advice? What would Paul's advice be, folks? In light of everything we know about 1 Corinthians 7, what would Paul's advice be? Don't get married. He said it in verse number 24, brethren, let every man wherein he is called therein abide with God. He said it in verse 26, I suppose therefore that this is good for the present distress. I say that it is good for a man not to be, not so to be. He says it in verse number 38, so then he that giveth her in marriage doeth well, but he that giveth her not in marriage doeth better. So if you were to go up to the Apostle Paul and say, my daughter wants to get married, and I really think he's a good guy, what would you say? Paul would say, I think she shouldn't do it. And by the way, as we will look at extensively, because Paul repeats himself on this matter many times in the book of 1 Corinthians, he would then say, and that's what I would tell anybody in any church in any country in the world. That advice would not change from place to place, never. She shouldn't marry. Yes, my opinion. My opinion is no. And by the way, I think the Lord would say no. That's what Paul would tell you. Now, one of the things, folks, that we want always to remember about Paul's writings and all biblical writings is that they are written with the expectation that people are going to take them to heart. So let's extend the scenario. Right? So here's Dad, and he encounters Paul, and he says, hey, I got a daughter that wants to get married. What do you think? Paul said, I don't think she ought to get married. And Dad said, well, then that's it. No marriage. That's where we come into, folks, to verse number 36 and verse number 37. Verses 36 and 37 set forth for you two different ways of thinking about this issue. And this is one of the things that Paul keeps bringing back into the equation. Paul doesn't say, okay, unilaterally, this is God's will for you. Are you a widow? Stay a widow. Are you divorced? Stay divorced. Are you single? Stay single. Are you a slave? Stay a slave. Are you a Jew? Stay Jewish. Are you Gentile? Stay Gentile. Absolutely, hands down, always, beyond any question, beyond any shadow of a doubt, this is what God wants for you, and I don't want to talk about it anymore. It's never gone like that anywhere in the chapter, folks. It always goes like this. Well, now we have to consider this. And then if we have in this situation, then we have to consider this. And you know, one of the things that you need to think about is that the time is short. And one of the things that you have to think about is the present distress. And one of the things you have to think about is that this is at best a temporary relationship. So Paul is always, he's doing something, folks, that a lot of people really find hateful. He is qualifying his position pretty systematically. So here's qualification in verse number 36. But if any man think that he behaveth himself uncomely toward his virgin, if she pass the flower of her age and needs so require, let him do what he will, he sinneth not. Let them marry. Which you see the way it's put there. You kind of get the idea that somebody is granting authority to the person. They're not the one marrying the person. Verse number 36. Let them marry. Right? So here's Dad. And he runs into Paul and he says, hey, I got a question. I got a daughter that wants to get married. What do you think? Paul says, I think she shouldn't. And I think that God thinks she shouldn't. What do you think? What do you think, Dad? And Dad says, well, if I don't let her get married, am I doing right by her? Because I think that's what's really going. Folks, when you read unseemly, and the only other place the word is used in the entire Bible is 1 Corinthians 13, where love doesn't do it. I would just caution you not to read 1 Corinthians 7:36, when you come to the word unseemly, think of two young people who are misbehaving themselves physically. Because I kind of think that the unseemly party here is the one with the authority. Is this the right thing to do to my daughter? My daughter is the one who wants to get married. I'm the one who holds that marriage in my hands. Is this the right thing to do to her? And this brings us to the next part of our little confusing thing there. If she passed the flower of her age. Well, again, some of the way you're going to think about that depends on whether you're going to turn that back on the virgin or whether you're going to turn that back on her father. And grammatically, it can go either way because it's not being gender specific. Paul wasn't being gender specific. Our King James Bible is, but Paul isn't. So in other words, one way to think about this, one of the things that could be coming into the mind of dad is, am I treating my daughter properly? She is not getting younger. Am I doing her any favors by not letting her get married in light of the fact that she is getting older? But again, folks, grammatically, it could be this way. It could be the dad saying, am I doing right by my daughter by not letting her get married? I'm not getting any younger. And since if there is no husband, I am the one who is responsible for her well-being. And I'm past my prime. Am I doing right by her? Is this the right thing? Is this the right thing to do to her? In light of the fact that I'm not getting any younger, what's going to happen to her when something happens to me and there's no husband to care for her? Because again, folks, in Paul's world, somebody has to be responsible for that woman. Or she is destitute and powerless in her world. She is a complete and utter victim. And this is where, if need so require, this is a word describing an obligation. Is there in light of either her advancing age or dad's advancing age, is there some inherent obligation to her? So then, verse 36, well then let him do what he will. All right, you went to Paul and you got Paul's advice and Paul said, I think she should stay single. And Paul said, I think the Lord would stay single. But what do you think? Brother, what do you think? Well, I think I'm past my prime. I think I'm not getting any healthier. I think she has a golden opportunity to get married. I'm not sure that it's the right thing to do to restrain this marriage. Well, then go ahead and let them marry. Nobody's sinning. Verse 36, let them marry. So that's one mindset to bring to the picture. Second mindset, verse 37. Paul, what do you think? My daughter would like to get married. Paul says, I don't think she should, and I think that God doesn't think she should. What do you think? I don't think she should either. I didn't think that she should when I walked in the door, and I count it providential that I ran into you, and my thinking that she shouldn't, and your advice that she shouldn't, and God's position that she shouldn't, so she's not going to get married. That's verse 37. But, nevertheless, verse 37, he that standeth steadfast in his heart, having no necessity, he feels no obligation towards her in this matter, but hath power over his own will. And the idea of the word power there is authority. Right? He is not of two minds on this. He is not indecisive about this. She's going, Daddy, I really want to get married. And he's going, God, Paul, and me don't think you should get married. The answer is no. Let not thy soul spare for her crying. And hath so decreed in heart that he will keep his virgin, doeth well. And keep there, folks. Again, please don't think of that in intimate physical terms. The word is not virginity. The word keep is guard, look out for. Right? This is easy to me. I have made arrangements. My health is good. I'm not that old. I've made provision. My daughter is going to be well cared for. She doesn't need a husband to take care of her. I will keep her. She was my responsibility. The Lord is faithful. She will be provided for. That doesn't even cross my mind. Okay. So then verse 38, bringing both mindsets to bear. So then he that giveth her in marriage doeth well. You haven't done anything wrong. It's a good thing. But it's a better thing if you tell her no. So you can't go wrong. Not a question of going wrong, which again, folks, tends to be the way that human beings default, right? When it's A or B, then we tend to assign a moral value to A or B. But this is not that kind of question. Then verses 39 and 40, Paul turns his attention to widows, granting them their permission. The wife is bound by the law as long as her husband liveth, but if her husband be dead, she is at liberty to be married to whom she will, only in the Lord. I mean, that is about, again, we've dealt with that, right? We have this very clear, beyond any confusion, statement, you are at liberty to marry. And this, by the way, is one of the passages that assure us that there is no moral taint at all to the remarriage of a widow. There's a lot of moral question about the remarriage of a divorced person, but there is no moral question about the remarriage of a widow or a widower. God has spoken clearly about that. The death of a spouse dissolves the marriage bond. And the only obligation then is to marry another believer. And yet, Paul comes back, verse number 40, to his constant standard piece of advice in the passage. But I think you'd be happier if you didn't. She is happier if she so abide after my judgment, and I think also that I have the Spirit of God. And so we come to the topic with questions and right? Can certain people get married under certain conditions? And we tend to want that to be the kind of question that we would ask as if there is a factual answer to that, right? I'm assuming that we understand this, right? That there are questions that we can pose that are questions of opinion. There are questions that we can pose that are questions of fact, right? Questions of opinion. Do you like vanilla ice cream? That's a question of opinion. How much is vanilla ice cream? That's a question of fact. Should you eat ice cream every day? That's a question of judgment. Folks, some questions are questions of judgment, not opinion, but not fact. So Paul is here rendering judgments to this question. Is it okay for me to get married? And we sometimes want, well, just give me a fact. But there are many factors that go into making this a decision of judgment. And that's how Paul deals with it. And folks, again, I'm going to touch on this a little bit next week. That's the expectation of the New Testament all the way through, is that God's people are cultivating the ability to make right decisions in judgment. Not to have everything be a matter of fact. Yes or no, you can or can't. but a matter of judgment. Many things are matters of judgment. All right, I'm going to stop there. If you want to take your prayer bulletin, is there anything that you need?